One of the forbidden things that Button loved was to watch young people dance. According to Papa's preaching, dancing was a grievous sin. People who danced certainly ended up in hell. Papa had used such strong words against dancing that Button didn't dare to perform the steps her feet were continually urging her to try. Sometimes the temptation was so strong it was hard for her feet to remain quiet. And then Button would inwardly rebel against Papa's preaching and promise herself that she would learn to dance as soon as someone would teach her. But when dark night descended and Button was alone with her thoughts, she would become frightened at having had such worldly notions and on bended knees would promise God never again to think so sinfully. She humbly sought God's forgiveness, only later to lash out at the Almighty in her diary. "Dear God, I can't understand it. The wind sways the trees in graceful rhythm, and all the little buttercups dance in the sunshine. On the river, the ripples shimmering on the moonlight look like a thousand Lilliput people dancing. Why should a young girl have to feel like an ungraceful, clumsy, and stiff lumber log, bobbing up and down in the stream because it is a sin to sway your body and skip with your feet? If I am not supposed to dance, why did you put a desire and a longing in my heart to do so? Forgive me, God, for talking to you so frankly, but I am tired of thinking of you sitting up there in the sky pointing your long finger at me in condemnation and saying, 'Look at her. There she goes.' You know I am unhappy when I do bad things, and I admit frequently I do. Just now, I feel like crying for 10 years without stopping. Amen." On a Saturday night, when Button was almost 14 years old, she took a long walk up the mountain road. Suddenly, she stopped as she heard coming through the air beautiful music, laughter, and singing. Button knew where it came from. There was a dance in Larson's Red Barn. Oh, how she longed to join those happy young people. But Papa had forbidden her to go near any such place. She hardly realized what was happening as her feet left the road and she went hurrying across the field in the direction of the Red Barn. She walked as close to the scene of merrymaking as she dared, and finding a big tree, she stood behind it, making herself as small as possible lest she be discovered. She need have had no fear, for everyone was having too much fun to notice her. She embraced the tree trunk, standing very, very still. A deep throbbing arose in her heart, but she bravely fought the tears back. Look at the good time everyone was having. So much fun. Everyone except her. A young couple who were dancing a waltz caught her attention. As they danced, they were smiling into each other's eyes. They were the most beautiful young people Button had ever seen. "Someday," she said aloud to herself and the tree, "someday I shall marry a boy that looks like that, and he will look at me as lovingly as this boy looks at his girl and will say, 'Darling, you are adorable and sweet as a rosebud. As your petals unfold, I want to be near to behold you in all your beauty.'" Still in a trance, she walked home slowly. The music, the dancers, the moon, the warm summer night were almost more than she could take. She could not forget the picture of the young man dancing. He couldn't be more than 18 and must either be a visitor or new in the village, for she had never seen him before. She knew the girl, Peyton Lynn's daughter. Those people never went to Papa's church, and right now Button didn't blame them, for if they did, they never could have had the fun they were having tonight. It was sinful not to go to church, but just for tonight, she would not let herself think of that. Instead, she would dream of that handsome boy who looked just like the herald of whom she had written in her book. As Button sat down to write in her diary that night, she pretended that she had come home from the party where she had been dancing with the new boy. "Dear Diary, tonight I danced with my dream boy in Larson's Red Barn. He held me very close as if I were grown up. And do you know what? God wasn't mad at all. When I looked around, he had sent down four little angels who were dancing too in their little white robes. As I saw their radiant faces, I knew they were as happy as I. Postscript. Dear God, is making believe a sin? I hope not, for in my heart I feel that you are not cross with me. I see a lovely star that you tossed into the air millions of years ago when the world was new and without sin. It is winking at me. Please, please forgive me for having such a good time tonight. Amen. It was fun doing things in her diary that she was not permitted to do in real life, almost as much fun as really doing them. When she fell asleep that night, she dreamed that she was grown up and that all the world was there for her to have fun in. When Button reached her 14th birthday, she celebrated by having a party for her friends. Mama made a delicious cake and told her that she was almost an adult now, and Papa tickled her under the chin and said she was almost as pretty as Mama was when he first saw her. Button had grown very tall and slim, and she had a graceful way of walking that made her look more like 16 than her actual age. Her eyes possessed unusual depths for a girl so young, and their color changed with the clothes she was wearing or the mood she was in. Sometimes they looked as angry as a turbulent river after a violent storm, but on Sunday morning, as she walked to church with the family, her eyes were calm and blue as the summer sky. At times during her 15th year, Button became very irate with her family, especially Mama. Button had not altogether forgiven Mama for not having understood about her calling and treating the matter so lightly. Mama was the queen of her household, and as the children swarmed around her like bees around their queen, Button stood silently by, feeling strange and hollow inside, wanting to be close, but hindered by an emotion that prevented a feeling of oneness with them. It pained her when Mama romped and laughed and sang with the other children. On rainy evenings, Mama would sit down on the floor of the Vardagstrom and gather her children in a circle around her to tell them stories, but Button would withdraw from the group, escaping to her room with the excuse of having homework to do. I can never get that apple caca out of my mind, sighed Button when alone. It was so much more important than her own daughter that day long ago. She stood by the window watching the wind in all its fury whipping the trees and flowers in the garden, bending them almost to the ground. But tomorrow, when the sun shone, they would rise again with a new beauty. Button lifted her head. Her big blue eyes staring into the darkness looked almost green. If they don't break when they are bent low, neither will I. Never, never, she promised herself. I may have to bend, yes, at the bows of life, but no matter how hard I am hit, I shall never break. She realized that the strength she possessed deep, deep within her, no one could take away, nor could anyone pry into her thoughts or laugh at her imagination. She lived in a world of her own, a world within a world. She loved this new kingdom she had discovered, a place to which she could escape and be at peace from the turmoil surrounding her, a place of joy and laughter. These quiet times, the book she was writing and her diary were her closest companions. Karen missed her gay company, for they did not see each other often, since they did not go to school together anymore. But one afternoon they met accidentally and decided to go berry picking along the ditches by the roadside. A little of the old closeness sprang up as they talked and laughed about school days. Then the mood changed and Karen complained as she faced Button, the smolten, berry-laden straw in her hand. What has happened to you, Button? You and I were the closest of friends, sharing everything, good or bad, and now we hardly know what to talk about. It isn't your fault, Karen, replied Button, trying to force a smile. You see, I've discovered that I am different from other girls. Perhaps a writer is like that, wanting to be alone and acting as if she were crazy. I don't even get along with my own family. I am different from all of them. Sometimes I feel as if I don't belong in the parsonage, as if Mama and Papa were not my real parents. Perhaps you were adopted, suggested Karen, trying to be of help. Some children don't know they're adopted until the time of their marriage, when it has to be revealed in the marriage papers. By then they don't care because they have a husband to love. How silly, laughed Button. Why should my parents want to adopt a child when they have so many themselves? Don't forget, Button, you were the second child, and, well, perhaps they wanted to be sure to have a girl after having had a boy. This was a new idea to Button, and one which gave food to thought. She worried about it as she went home to the parsonage, scanning the well-known surroundings in an unrealistic way. Perhaps this was the answer why she was so different, so restless, and had been so naughty as a little girl. This would explain, too, why Mama was so impatient with her, and why she hadn't taken an interest in her calling. She studied her brothers and sisters and found they all resembled one another, but not one of them looked like her. The rest had a smug feeling of belonging and being wanted, whereas she was the odd, lonely one. Perhaps Karen was right after all. Papa hated red hair, and Nim had been born with it. Perhaps Mama wanted to be sure that she would have a blonde baby and wasn't taking any chances. Somehow, Button must learn the answer. She thought she had done so when on a Saturday afternoon, after she had cleaned the parsonage kitchen, Mama came in to inspect her work. Usually, Mama took it for granted that if Button had cleaned the kitchen, it was clean, but not on this Saturday. She did something Button had never seen her do before. She ran a finger along the panels of the doors, frowning at the results. She opened the closet door, hung up an apron that was on the floor, placed a clean newspaper in the waste paper basket, took a broom handle, and poked under the sofa. Mama was rewarded for this effort by having toys of all descriptions come tumbling out, as well as a soiled apron, a bib, and even a stale crust of bread. Button was terribly ashamed, but her pride would not unseal her tight-closed lips as Mama's words showered down upon her. Button Franson, I have never been so horrified in all my life. You know, as well as I do, that dirty clothes belong in the wash bin in the hall closet and not under the sofa. Just look at this mess. Do you call this cleaning? And the toys. Since when have you decided that under the sofa is a better receptacle than the big box provided for them? I have a good mind to show Papa just what you have done. He'll switch you big as you are. However, just this once, I am going to give you a second chance. But as a punishment, you are to clean every bit of this kitchen over again. Even the parts that are clean, you are to scrub. And it all must be accomplished before your bedtime. Mama gave Button a scorching look and marched out of the kitchen, her heels clicking. Silent as she had been, Button was raging inside. It would be late when she finished, and her arms and back would ache from all that unnecessary scrubbing. Karen was right. There was no doubt now in Button's mind that she had been adopted. A real mama just wouldn't be so cruel to her own flesh and blood. Her eyes burned from having to hold back the tears so long, and if she ever got to her room, she would let the flood loose. After that, she would talk it over with her dear diary. But later that night, when work had been completed and she was once more in her room, the tears did not come, for by that time her imagination was intrigued by the wonderful story this would make. She had no time for tears, as she wrote in her diary, "Dear, dear diary, you are still my best and very dearest friend, and I have shared many secrets with you. Now I know that there is a great mystery concerning my birth. Karen gave me the idea that I was adopted, but I believe now that this is not quite true. Instead of being adopted, I am a changeling. Even Mama doesn't know this, but it explains why I am so much trouble and why I love to go wandering at nighttime, forever restless. I really belong to a gypsy family that visited Lapland with their big wagon the year of my birth. My mama was a beautiful gypsy, hated by her mother-in-law because she had wanted her son to marry another. The night I was born and mama in her weakness slept, her mother-in-law stole me and ran to the parsonage where a baby girl had just been born. In the darkness of the night, she exchanged me for the parsonage baby. I screamed and screamed because I wanted my own mama, and that is why I am restless, for there is hot gypsy blood in my veins. Mama says she feels sorry for my future husband, for I will not be a good housekeeper, having a house that looks clean on the outside, but is filled with trash in places, like under the sofa, where the casual observer does not look. She does not realize how much work it is for a young girl to clean a big kitchen, and thinks I sweep things under the sofa just for the fun of it. Dear God, you are the only one that knows whether or not I have written the truth. I hope that I am wrong, for I don't really want to be a changeling. I do want more than anything else to feel that I really belong to someone. So if you don't give me an answer soon, I may run off to join the gypsies. Amen. Soon Button was faced with another worry. This time it was Papa. It struck her one night as suddenly as lightning will strike from a clear sky. During the evening meal, it had seemed to Button that Papa had been too extra nice to her, passing the dishes of food to her twice, and taking an interest in the little things, which was unusual for Papa, strictly out of character. Later he had sought her out alone, and the words he had spoken had stunned her. Button, dear, where did you ever get the feeling that you don't belong to our happy family? I hope it's a notion that will pass from you soon. All young people go through emotional conflicts before they adjust to being grown up, and you are no exception. Life is sometimes very hard for little girls who think they are big before their time. If ever you want to talk to your papa about some of these problems, I'll be very happy to help you in any way I can. Thank you, Papa, said Button, but I need no help. I'm fine. How could Papa so perfectly read her thoughts? She should have asked him, for a very disturbing thought was entering her mind, a thought she didn't dare to think. Where could Papa have received his information? Surely he who stood in the pulpit every Sunday morning and taught people how to live godly lives, surely he wouldn't go into her bedroom, open her third bureau drawer looking under her whole pile of underwear, and pull out her diary and read it day after day for how long? Oh, no, she just mustn't think such evil of Papa. The thought must have occurred to him because she looked so sad and never listened to Mama's stories anymore. Yes, that must be it. But how could she be sure? She couldn't very well ask him. She would have to put him through a test that would determine once and for all whether or not he was guilty. That night, when Button had finished writing in her diary, being very guarded about what she revealed, she placed a tiny white thread between the pages. This thread would be the determining factor in condemning or acquitting Papa. For some unknown reason, it seemed to Button that all the household went out of their way to be extra nice to her the next day. Nim gave her a picture of a movie actress he had cut out from an advertisement that had blown down. This was sweet of Nim, as anything connected with the theater was taboo in the parsonage. Nim knew how she admired those beautiful film stars. Pelet smiled his sunniest smile each time she passed him by, and Vicky asked her what apron she would choose for the next week of school, while Greta gave her the bigger part of the cookie she had received for going on an errand. Yes, everyone seemed to have been instructed to make her feel a part of the family. Even the little boys invited her to play a game with them, and Kirsten asked for help in tying her big red ribbon bow. What had happened? Had Papa told them about the talk he had had with his oldest daughter? There was no way of knowing, since she would not ask, not even if her life depended upon it. But it was so pleasant to be surrounded by love that she almost forgot about the adoption until Mama asked for her company on a short house call. "It will only take a few minutes, and we'll have a nice walk home talking together," said Mama sweetly. "Somehow, Button, you and I seem to have grown apart." It was fun walking with Mama. All the old bitterness seemed to dissolve, and she even forgave Mama for not understanding about her being an author. Mama's sweetness was making up for it. They talked and laughed about many things that had happened at home or in the church. "My," said Mama, placing her arm around Button's shoulders, "you are as tall as I am, and what a pretty girl you are. Please, dear, don't grow away from me. I want to be your very closest friend." "Thank you, Mama. I know I'll need you. At times I do feel almost grown up, but there's still a lot of the little girl left." "I hope that there'll always be a little girl for me to hug," smiled Mama, "and a big girl, too. How will I remember the day you were born, Button? You gave me the least pain of all the children, and you were the prettiest of all my babies, so tiny and delicate-looking except for those great big blue eyes. Even that first day they looked around as if to say, 'My, this is a funny old world I've come to live in.' And I hugged you to my heart. Believe me, Button, although I do have to scold you at times, you are still very precious to me." Button laughed gaily, a big burden having rolled away. "I will not sweep things under the kitchen sofa again, Mama," she promised, mischief dancing in her eyes. "I am glad, Button, for when you do things like that, it reflects back on me, for I am the only one who taught you to keep house. People who only keep a clean house on the surface are apt to be deceivers, hiding things in their own lives that they don't want others to discover. You see now why I was so cross finding you doing this very thing?" "Oh, yes, Mama," answered Button mechanically, for she could hardly hear Mama's words above the tumult of her own feelings. Her heart was singing with joy, and the new happiness that filled her small frame were almost more than she could contain. Mama had proved by her words that she was not an adopted or exchanged baby at all. She was really Button Franson and belonged to the family as much as any of the other children. How could she have had such foolish thoughts? Oh, to be alone in her room so that she could tell her diary the truth. Life was tremendously sweet, and now she would go to work on her book and surprise them all. When the supper dishes were done and put away and the kitchen as tidy as Mama would leave it, Button kissed Mama and Papa goodnight and hurried to her room. She was so excited that she took two steps at a time up the stairs. The door to her room was slightly open. She stepped inside and the smile left her face, her spirit sinking down almost to the tip of her toes. There on the rug lay the evidence, a tiny white thread. Papa was guilty. He had shared her very secret. She felt as if she were naked before a crowd of people and wanted to run and hide. Papa was reading her diary. Slowly she sank down on her bed, but the tears would not come. What a blessed relief it would be if she could cry, for now she felt all dead inside. Her new kingdom had been smashed to pieces. "I will never, never, never write in my diary again," she whispered. She pressed the book to her heart, and then very slowly she tore out the pages one by one and threw them in the wastebasket. Then she crumpled the black cover. It had been so much fun to talk to her diary, but nothing that had fun in it seemed to last for her. There was still Edith, the book. She rose from the bed and took it from the drawer. Tenderly she looked at it. Then she folded the manuscript and placed it in an envelope and sealed it. "Never shall I finish it," she spoke aloud. "Never, never, never. Edith shall never marry her lover. Sometimes when I am old and gray, I shall take it out and read it again. But tonight is the end of Mary Terrier. Perhaps I shall still be an author someday. But it won't be until I have moved from home and will have some privacy. Perhaps I shall never write. I don't know. I may be a complete failure. Button knelt a long time by her bed. It was so much more difficult to talk to God than to write to him. Dear God, she uttered so softly that she could hardly hear her own voice. You are all I have now. My kingdom has been lost. But please help me not to feel resentful with my papa. I still love him so. Help me to understand and believe that you are my friend. Let me feel close to you, because right now I hardly want to live. I don't think I shall ever smile again. Amen. When sleep finally came that night, Button had changed from girlhood to womanhood. She realized that childhood was past, and that life was not easy to live when one was sad. But she closed her eyes with the thought, there is always a tomorrow, and the morrow could be better than the day before. She would not break, just bend, and this was surely bending very low. Chapter 4 is entitled Button and Bows. Along the winding path up the mountainside, young lovers walked arm in arm. Unspoken words of tenderness hung in the air. Down in the village, the clock in the tower chimed 9 times. As Button hurried up the path, she smiled to herself, and there was mischief sparkling in her eyes. Here she was acting like an adult, and she was only 14 years and 3 months old. Yet romance had entered into her life and had completely filled every part of her being. Love had come in the form of Gunnar Borgerson, driving away the sorrow of having to give up her talent, a sorrow that had been so deep that she had been certain that all life's joys had come to an end. How wonderfully mistaken she had been. Papa, of course, knew nothing of this new stage she was approaching. If he had, Button was sure he would have unmercifully squashed it under his large foot, as if it had been a bug come to plague the household. Know this secret she must guard as carefully as she would tread on sacred ground. She had tried to share some of her feelings with Mama, who had taken it for granted that the love she was asking about existed for Button only in storybooks. Are you reading books that Papa has censored, Button? Asked Mama. You talk so strangely for one your age, and your eyes are full of dancing stars. Am I too young to ask about love? Returned Button, and seeing the laugh Mama was trying to suppress, Button decided to tell her nothing of Gunnar. But she would have to find a way to go on dates, and a way always opened for her when she desired something hard enough. Button had found the way. Love, she thought, could come at any age, for there were certain things that slumbered in her soul until you yourself awakened them to life. Yes, she had found love bursting forth in full bloom the night she first met Gunnar. Of course, Papa must have forgotten how it felt to be young and romantic. It was so long ago, Button reasoned as she gazed at the round yellow moon hanging low over the treetops. What a divine feeling it was, this very first romance. But how would Papa feel if he knew about her and Gunnar? What a night this would be. Saturday night was made for lovers. All day long she had worked to help Mama ready the parsonage for Sunday. She had worked so hard and well that Mama had been really pleased, not knowing that Button only did it to make the time pass swiftly so nighttime would come sooner. Now the lamps in the parsonage would be burning low. All would be still and peaceful. Button could picture it all in her mind. In the kitchen, Mama would be finishing her last task of the day, that of shining the children's shoes. And in the study, Papa would be going over his Sunday morning sermon for the last time. He would be walking back and forth, sermon in hand, written in his big hand on lined yellow paper. Then he would stop, place the sermon on his desk, and draw a circle around a certain sentence. That meant that at this point a good joke would be appropriate. Perhaps he would first tell it to Mama that night, for Mama was very critical of Papa's jokes. Button remembered hearing Mama tell him once, Pontus, your jokes must be so good that you yourself can laugh at them without effort. An ill-fitting joke will ruin the purpose of a perfectly good sermon. The people will remember the joke and not the gospel you are preaching to save their souls. Papa believed in Mama's judgment, for in most things she was right. Upstairs, the children, with the exception of her oldest brother, Nim, would be in bed and asleep. But soon now Mama would be calling, "Good night, son. God protect and keep you." And Nim would blow out his lamp and go to sleep. In her own room, there would be a strange stillness. Button laughed, thinking of the form she had substituted for herself, which was now lying in her bed. It most certainly had the shape of a girl, and she had carefully pulled the quilt over most of the head. If Mama and Papa peeked in, they would not suspect that it was her dummy friend, Flora, reclining there, while their own daughter was scurrying up the mountain path. Flora was a strange combination of a pillow, a cabbage head, and some hair from the roll Mama used to pin over her forehead when she was especially dressed up. Unbeknownst to Mama, Button had pulled a few strands a day and had them glued to the cabbage. The blonde hair peeking out from under the bedclothes made a perfect disguise. Yes, Button had climbed into bed at the usual time, but instead of her nightie, she had been dressed in her Sunday dress and had to lie very still so as not to get it wrinkled. At 8:30, she had slipped from bed, tucked her nightie under her arm, and laid Flora in her place. She had patted the hard head and whispered, "Be a good girl. Don't you dare move and give me away," and she had pressed a quick kiss on the leafy cheek. The front door had squeaked as she pushed it open, and for one fearful second she had held her breath. But Mama had been humming a hymn in the kitchen, and Papa was reading aloud, so they had not noticed. When Button was safely in the woodshed, she had hidden her nightie under a log and had flown free as a bird toward the mountain. To hide the nightie in the woodshed had been a brilliant idea, for if anyone awakened and saw her creeping into the house in her gown, nothing would be suspected, as nocturnal trips sometimes had to be made to the outhouse. Anyway, the happiness in Button's heart crowded out all fear of being discovered. For just a moment, she had struggled with the thought that this might be a sin. Quickly, she had dismissed this unwelcome idea, for even if it was, wasn't it worth sinning to meet Gunner and be considered almost grown up? She tossed her pretty head and thought how silly it was of people to sleep away the beauty of the night, the wonderment of love, the gentleness and beauty of the night. The mystery of nature stirred her so it almost hurt. Button had resolved to live life to its fullest, and no one would have the power to stop her. She would always seek until she found a way to fulfill herself. Right now, for instance, why should she sleep if she could be with Gunner? And then, through the shadows of the night, she saw him pass the bench by the lone pine, and he was running to meet her. How handsome he looked with his green felt hat tipped back on his dark, wavy hair. Although she couldn't see his eyes, Button knew that their dark brown depths sparkled with happiness. They clasped their hands and stood very still for a moment. "You made it, Button." "Of course. Didn't you think I would? I promised you I would find a way." Their laughter echoed against the mountain as, arms entwined, they started to climb even higher. Gunner held her tighter and whispered, "Sometimes, my little one, your bravery frightens me. What a child you are in years, and still to me you seem as old as..." "As you, Gunner?" interrupted Button eagerly. He looked down at the flushed face. "Yes, Button, you don't seem a day under 18 to me." "Good. Then I won't have to feel that your going with me is as if you had robbed the cradle." He drew her closer, and their steps sounded together as they climbed higher and higher in the stillness of the night. Presently they stopped and looked down at the village below them. Like twinkling stars that had lost their way, the small houses looked. Stars lost from the sky. Button placed her hand over Gunner's mouth. "Let us not talk for a while, Gunner. Just stand here and be thankful that we can be together." Are you afraid our talking would break the enchantment button? You mean all this happiness that makes us feel as we would burst? Gunner nodded. They walked on in silence. After a while, Gunner stopped. What if they should miss you, Button? He asked anxiously. She tossed her head indifferently. Nothing much. A good thrashing and being forbidden to go out nights for a few weeks, perhaps. But nothing can happen. Nothing in the whole world. But even if it did, this night is worth it 1,000 times. They had stopped in front of a clump of trees. Oh, Gunner, here it is. Button held her breath. I knew that sometime I would find it, just as in my dream. Can you see it? See what, silly? The house, Gunner. Our house. If you dream with me, you will see it too. See how peaceful it is in the spot so far away from the noise of the world and so near the sky? Our cottage is red and white and just big enough for you and me and our three children. I can see them pressing their noses against the window pane waiting for us. How beautiful they are, two boys and a girl. Gunner laughed. I am afraid your imagination is contagious, for I've been infested. I can see it too, Button, through your eyes, and I like it. It's fun seeing things that aren't there. It's called a second sight, Gunner. I can always see things I want badly enough, and I can always make my dreams come true. I hope our house comes true. It will, Gunner, if we dare to dream it long enough. Button took a step forward. How low it is, with the tall spruces standing watch over it. The two boys look just like their dad. And the little girl has a funny little nose like her mother's, and big blue eyes and golden curls, and when she smiles, her teeth are as white as pearls. You have caught on, Gunner. You're doing fine. Our curtains are real lace. We are rich, for you are the busiest doctor in town because everybody likes you, but I like you best of all. You crazy, precious girl. Keep on talking like that. Our house looks homey, and see, there in the corner is your office, with the sign on the door, Gunner G. Borgerson, M.D. You are so friendly to all the little children the mothers bring to you, bouncing them on your knee and putting your finger under the girls' chins, pulling their curls and telling them how pretty they are. And the old people come, too, for you listen sympathetically to their troubles and try to make them well again. Only, oh dear, it will take so long before you are a doctor and we can be married. Perhaps we shouldn't wait. We could run away to Italy, and by lying about our ages, we could be married right away. Our happiness wouldn't last long in the loneliness of a strange land. Imagine Christmas, when we would decorate our little spruce tree with roses, and I would be missing Mama and Papa and the rest of the family. I would soon grow sorry that I had married you. I am always sorry when I do something wrong. I would kiss your loneliness away and call you my little dream girl. Button lifted wide eyes toward the star-studded sky. Yes, it would be all right for you to kiss me then because we would be married. Gunner drew her close to his heart. Button, may I kiss you now? He whispered. Button stared at him with unbelieving eyes. Then she laughed. Of course not, silly. We aren't even engaged yet. They ran down the mountainside. Strange sounds came from the woods, and the path was deserted. It was very late. Once on the parsonage road, they slowed their pace. Button said good night to Gunner outside the woodshed. You must go quickly now, she whispered. Papa might come out. Until next Saturday night, then, precious, I shall count the minutes. She watched him walk away swiftly into the night. Then, with haste, she slipped out of her best clothes and placed them in a box she had behind the woodpile. Once in her nightie, she stepped out on the lawn to drink in again the mysterious beauty of the night that held so many promises of a joyful future to a young girl's heart. An eerie sound came from the mountain. Button shivered. The moon was high in the sky now. The stars were fading. Soon the sun would be lightening the eastern horizon. Alone up there on the mountain stood their dream house, unseen by human eyes. Button breathed a prayer, eyes upraised. Please, God, dear God, don't be angry with me tonight. Gunner and I had such a good time. I love your beautiful world, but I love your nights best of all. Good night, Father God. I think I love you too, if you are not cross with me. Amen. Late as it was, it took Button a long time to fall asleep. Having put Flora safely away, her thoughts dwelt on the evening. If only she could share her feelings with her diary. But she just had to relive them in her mind instead. Once she crept out of bed and knelt by the windowsill, still fascinated by the splendor of the night. So much she had wanted Gunner to kiss her, but it would have been very, very wrong. The time would come when she would be old enough to act like other lovers, but at her age it would be a sin, and God would be angry. Button felt happy knowing she had done the right thing and that even Papa would have been pleased had he known. Back in bed again, she let her thoughts drift to the night she had first met Gunner. If only she could have shared this experience with her diary. But her diary was no more. Thinking would be safer, since no one could read her thoughts. They would be all her very own. The meeting had happened the night she had discovered that Papa was reading her beloved diary. She had felt desolate, believing that never again would life hold any joys for her. After the parsonage had been stilled for the night, she had gone walking as if that could relieve the terrible pain that kept mounting within her. She had taken the path that led to the lake, which was not too distant from the parsonage. It had been very early in the spring, and patches of snow remained here and there in the shadows where the sun rays had not yet reached them. The blowing wind had rippled the lake into small waves that made a soothing sound as they were tossed upon the shore. Suddenly, Button's eyes had fallen on Gunner, sitting on a rock not a stone's throw away. His head had been buried in his hands as if he were sorrowing, so she could not tell if he were young or old. She had stepped toward him, and as he lifted his head, she saw that he was quite young, and very nice looking, and someone she had never seen before. He seemed annoyed that someone had intruded upon his privacy. "Where did you come from?" he blurted out. "Hi," answered Button. "I was just walking, but perhaps I'm not real, just a figment of your imagination or a dream." "You could be indeed," he relaxed. "There was no one here just a moment ago. I came like an angel to minister to your sadness. Or if I won't do, you could try my papa. He is the preacher in the village. But probably you are one of those people who never go to church." "You are right. I don't go to church, and I don't need a preacher. In fact, I don't like them." Button laughed. "At times I don't like them either." "You are a strange girl," he laughed, too. "I came here to be alone in order to solve my problems and was angry with your interference. But I find that I like you, and I'm glad you came. My father isn't a preacher, but there are times when I don't like him either." Then he told her his story. His father was the new director of the ore mines and wanted his son to learn the business. But Gunner had set his heart upon becoming a doctor. "I hate the mines. It's like attending your own funeral to go down into the deep, dark ground with only a small light on your forehead. Each day, I feel that I can't possibly descend another time. But my father refuses to listen to me. He says that at 18, I'm not old enough to know my own mind." They talked at length that night and afterwards met whenever they could. And now, each Saturday night, there were the mountain walks. They both felt that they were deeply in love, and though Button had told him she was only 14, to him it did not matter in the least, for she seemed so much older. She had told him that he must learn to dare to dream dreams. "Gunner, you must believe that you can be a doctor. You must dream it a long, long time, and then it will happen. Dreams are very much like stars."
"Like stars? What do you mean?"
"Well, at times when you look up, the sky is bright with them, and then again you see no stars. But if you take the time to gaze long enough, you'll see that they're really there by the millions. Then you wonder why you didn't see them before. It's the same with becoming a doctor. You must see yourself with the black bag in your hand and don't ever see the light on your forehead or the black pit again. Blot them out of your mind, Gunner. I can teach you to dream beautiful dreams." And she had. Until now they were dreaming together. And now, tonight, he had asked to kiss her. Button had wanted him to do so very, very much, more than anything in the whole wide world. But she couldn't spoil her happiness by sinning, for then the spell might be broken. "Oh, Gunner," she whispered, "I love you even more than my diary." Slowly the picture of him faded from her mind, her eyes closed, the long lashes lying like half moons on her flushed cheeks. Now and then they fluttered a little as if they objected to closing out the new day that peacefully embraced the parsonage in its gentle arms. If Button could have seen Gunner, she would have known that he too had tossed restlessly, thinking of her, of the night he had met her, of each meeting since, and wondering how life had ever existed without her. Yes, he was in love with a little girl of 14 who was in both mind and body too mature for her years. What a strange combination this daughter of a preacher was. She could speak of love and marriage as easily as breathing, but refused to be kissed. Her hand was warm and responsive, and her eyes as bright as the stars of which she had spoken. She could actually make him believe that his dreams would come true. Already he was seeing himself as a great doctor, living in a cozy cottage up the mountain road with a beautiful wife and three lovely children. He could reach his goal with Button beside him. She was foolish and brave, and with her sweetness drew him to her and then unmercifully pushed him away. His blood pounded in his veins at the thought of his lips pressed against hers. Like honey they would feel, fresh and pure. Chapter 5 is entitled Tender Roots. Dummy Flora was no more. She had gone to as inevitable an end as had everything else of value and importance in Button's young life. Almost like a funeral, her going had been, with a stern preacher officiating, but minus the flowers and tears. For Button had not shed even one tear when she saw that her faithful friend had been shattered into her original elements, one cabbage head, one pillow with a rope tied around its middle, and a tuft of fine blonde hair. Poor, poor Flora. She had been lying there innocently in Button's bed on her usual stint of Saturday night duty, when without warning the door had pushed open and Papa had entered. Now that it was over and Papa had left, how funny he had looked in his short nightshirt and bare feet. Button was able to reconstruct what must have happened. A few minutes ago, Papa and she had had a long, long talk, for he had not spared the words. At 9 o'clock last evening, he had come to her room with very important news. Thinking she was asleep, he had tiptoed to her bed and remained there motionless for a few moments while he had decided whether or not he should awaken her. Button could picture him standing there and then making up his mind, suddenly touching what he thought was a soft shoulder and bending low to whisper into what should have been a pink ear. "Button," he had murmured, but all that greeted him was a strong whiff of wilted cabbage. It had not taken Papa long to discover that the smelly object substituting for his daughter actually was that a cabbage. His unpredictable daughter must be out in the night, wandering about in her nightgown, gazing at the starlit sky. Yes, Button was sure that must have been what he had been thinking. He must also have conjectured that he was wrong in believing that Button had become a good girl. She was still a problem. There simply was no accounting for the strange things she did. My, but Papa must have been angry, for he had flung Flora from the bed with such force that she landed in the corner by the dresser, completely dismembered. After that, he had calmed down a bit and crept into Flora's place under the gay patch quilt to await his erring child's return. During the long wait, Papa had napped now and then, and the brief snatches of sleep had served to better his mood somewhat, although he was deeply disturbed about the lateness of the hour. Then he had heard the unsuspecting Button creeping into the room. Her face had been flushed and her eyes dancing like stars after an enchanted night on the mountaintop with Gunner. She had reached out her arms as if to embrace the whole world and taken a couple of dancing steps toward the bed and jubilantly bent down to hug her friend. "Flora, darling," she had whispered dreamily, "you are an angel to take my place." And as suddenly as a flow of water is stopped by turning off a faucet, her words ceased. Flora felt so strange and soft. Presently, Button realized that instead of a cabbage head, she had grabbed a human one fastened to her papa, who was gasping for breath. Button blinked and stammered in surprise, grasping for words that were not there. She felt like laughing and crying, like shouting and whispering, while all the time she was trying to think up an excuse that would save her from this dire predicament. She stared into Papa's eyes, penetrating eyes that pierced through hers as they stared back at her unmercifully. Finally, she spoke in a quavering, raspy voice, pretending to be gay. "But Papa, what in the world are you doing in my bed? And at this time of the night..." "What do you think I'm doing?" snapped Papa bitterly, his eyes shooting flames. "I've been waiting for hours for you, young lady." Button made a great effort to look small and demure as she stepped out of her slippers and crawled up on the foot of the bed. "I was wandering around, Papa. I wasn't at all sleepy, and I felt a wild desire to go into the night. Why did God make the night so mysteriously lovely if we must sleep them all away?" Papa was caught off guard by this unexpected question, so he did not respond immediately. In the interval of silence, Button shook with fear, thinking that Papa was trying to figure out a punishment that would be great enough for this, the latest of her crimes. After what seemed to be an eternity of waiting, Papa spoke. "Button, I came here to talk to you." It was only 9 o'clock then. He paused for a moment. "Mama and I will give you permission to wander, as you call it, out into the night whenever you like. You will have no need to use a dummy or any other invention you might dream up. Just let us know that you are going. Bid us good night, and for goodness sake, go out with your clothes on. Walk out through the door in a proper fashion, and then there will be no law to break." Button couldn't believe that she had heard Papa's words correctly. If she had, he must have lost his mind. Perhaps studying too hard for his sermons had made Papa sick. Was that why she had found him sleeping in her bed instead of being with Mama where he belonged? What other reason could there be for his giving her permission to run out in the night as she pleased, not even caring if she ever slept? Something was very, very wrong, for Papa was acting entirely out of character. Perhaps she had better run and fetch Mama and tell her that Papa was sick indeed. But Papa had sat up in bed, pushed the pillows against the wall, and leaned against them as if his last words had taken all his strength. Then he spoke again, this time with a calm preacher, a sermon at prayer meeting type voice. "This evening, Postmaster Olson delivered a very important letter for which I have been waiting a long time. In 6 weeks, we are moving to America. That is why I am granting you permission to roam around. Enjoy all of nature, night and day, in your dear homeland, for you will soon bid it farewell. I trust you will not misuse your freedom. Oh, no, Papa, promised Button, too stunned to believe that what he was saying could be true. Button, said Papa more kindly, I wanted you to be the first one to hear this news. It shouldn't surprise you too much, for you know Mama has talked America for years, and you also know that recently there has been a strong possibility that I would receive a call over there. All you children wanted to go, so what could I do but acquiesce? Well, now the time has come, and the day and the hour will come fast. Button swallowed hard. Papa didn't sound as if this was good news. He looked very sad. How thoughtful he had been to come and share the news with her first. She was sorry that again she had disappointed him. But how could she tell him that she had changed her mind about wanting to go? She couldn't tell him about Gunner and risk losing the freedom Josh granted her. She must act happy despite the hurt in her heart. Perhaps we shall all like America, she said. Perhaps Mama's dream of having us all educated will come true. Perhaps even you will like it, Papa. Leaving Lapland, Button, will be hard for us all. To pull up our roots from the homeland soil is not easy, and yours are very young and tender. It will be the hardest for you because you love your country with a true heart, but your roots will also transplant easier in the new soil. Don't worry about it, Button. Mama has the best in mind for all of us, and she is always very wise and right in most things. How kind Papa was, and how touching his concern for her. Papa had needed her tonight. He had felt that they belonged together in this parting. Her strong Papa had needed to be comforted. This was a new side of him that Button hadn't known existed. He was human and became bewildered and confused at times just like the rest of the family. Her arms crept around his neck. It will be all right, Papa, and I thank you for the freedom to wander. I'll try hard to be a good girl. She did not know how many times she had given him this promise, and she had always meant it. Perhaps this time she would keep it. When Papa left, Button stretched out in bed. It had been a very eventful night indeed. Presently, her door opened, and Papa stuck his head inside. I just happened to think, Button, he whispered, putting his finger to his mouth, that you better not tell Mama about the dummy. There are some things that are just as well for your Mama not to know. I promise, Papa. Yes, you and I alone will know about Flora. Papa smiled happily as the door closed and a silvery string of laughter rolled from Button's lips. Quickly, she covered her mouth with her pillow. It would be a sin to laugh aloud this time of the early Sabbath morning in the parsonage, but the scene with Flora had been so funny. Papa is afraid Mama will laugh at him, Button thought, but sharing a secret with Papa really made her feel close to him. Although the night was mostly spent, it was hard to go to sleep. The time was so short before she would be moving away. What would America be like? When Button finally slept, she dreamed of houses so tall and straight they reached into the clouds, of wide stone streets where richly dressed people strolled, and of dollar bills raining from heaven. When she awoke, she was in a happy, excited mood. After all, if she did not like America, she could always return to Sweden, and Gunnar would be waiting for her. Gunnar and their dream house up on the mountaintop. She would not worry about the future, because all the new tomorrows could be better than all the yesterdays. She would make them that way. How fast those 6 weeks flew by, and what a conglomeration of emotions they contained. Excitement, anticipation, sorrow, joy. It was bittersweet, this leaving of one's country, and it was hard to believe that the whole thing was not just one fantastic dream. Every day there were farewell parties and speeches, and gifts of every description poured into the parsonage. People were constantly coming and going, and Mama was as happy as a young bride, singing and laughing the days away. Papa tried bravely to look happy, but Button knew the sadness that lurked beneath his smile and saw how heavy his steps had become. Pulling up those roots is hard for him, she thought tenderly as she watched him going down the path. Papa did not like to move away, and her heart ached for him. She had been unable to analyze her own feelings. There was a numbness in her heart, or was she refusing to face the issue? If she looked deep, deep within herself, would her heart be crying? Button was in a gay mood when she told Gunner the news. It was hard to see the light disappear from his eyes as if she had struck him. Don't take it so hard, Gunner, she begged, smiling so her mouth hurt. Just think of how many new things I'll see. Lapland here in Sweden is not such a big place after all. And you can come after me. You can get rich quick in America, and then you will have all the money you need to study and be a great doctor. People over there have so much money they don't know what to do with it. Some of them throw it away just for a lark. Why, all you have to do is to stand on a street corner, and a man driving a big automobile is liable to come up to you and say, "Young man, you need this, so you can take that pretty girl for a ride. Will you do me the honor of accepting it as a gift?" What could you do but accept? And then I could smile my prettiest smile and say, "Thank you kindly, sir." Oh, Gunner, can't you see how wonderful it all will be? And each summer we could come back to Lapland for our vacation. Please, please don't look so sad. If you like, I will give you my promise before I leave. You are still a crazy girl, Button, Gunner laughed. What in the world will I do without you? But, little one, I will not extract my promise from you. You are so young and bubbling over with life, everybody will love you. Gunner looked past Button as though he was trying to see the unknown years ahead. Long, empty years without this precious girl. I want you to be free, Button, he said slowly. When you go out into that big, wide, unknown world. If you really love me, space cannot separate us, and you will come back to Lapland someday, and we will marry here. But you may meet someone over there who will claim you and your love. So the greatest gift I can give to you is not to tie you down with words. Only your heart shall belong to me until it makes its choice. Oh, Gunner! Gunner, you talk as beautiful as my papa when he's preaching. I'll never forget you, never, never. I shall give you a gift, too, Button hesitated a moment, as though she was wording very carefully what she was to say. Gunner, I shall give you Karen Lund, my best friend, for a pal only, just be friends. She is a deacon's daughter, and she will talk you out of your blue moods. Karen will be very good for you, Gunner. Gunner smiled sadly. Thank you, Button. I know you mean well, so I'll be a good friend to Karen because of you. But I assure you, we will be friends and nothing more. Something hurt deep within Button's heart as though a needle was being pressed into her tender skin. Into her mind had come the picture of Karen and Gunner strolling up the mountain path alone. And she, Button, would be far, far away. And who could tell? Karen was so lovely that before long she and Gunner would be more than just friends. Perhaps it would be that Karen would live in the dream house with Gunner. But then there could be a new love waiting for Button, too. Life was full of surprises. That night, as Gunner and Button stood on the mountain by their clump of trees, Button could no longer see their dream house. It had completely disappeared from her vision. She said nothing to Gunner, for she knew the secret of dreaming. If once you let a dream go,
You can't recapture it, no matter how hard you try. Even if you only subtract a bit of its substance, it disappears and dissolves and is no more. She tried not to be sad, for she had brought it on herself by her gift of Karen to Gunter, and now she must determine to be happy because those two, having each other, would be less lonely without her. Papa had said it would hurt to pull up her roots, but now one at least was pulled, and though she would see Gunner again, the agony of the pulling would be over. However, there were two more to go, one for Karen and the biggest and deepest of them all, the one for Sweden, her dear homeland. Karen had taken the news very hard. Ever since that Sunday when Papa had read his resignation in church, she had followed Button around like a shadow, even spending most of her time in the parsonage. They were sitting talking in the parsonage garden. Karen's enormous eyes never left Button for a moment. "You're just born lucky, Button," she said in a high-pitched voice. "First you're going to become an author, and then you become the special friend of the handsomest boy in town. And now you're going to America, where you are sure to marry a millionaire and won't have to lift even your little finger to work." "Oh, Karen, don't talk so silly. If a millionaire comes along and wants to marry me, I'll simply say, 'No, sir, don't marry me. Go over to Lapland and find my best friend. She is prettier than I.'" They both laughed, sounding as though they were still schoolgirls together. There was so much to talk about, so much to remember. Button told Karen of her gift to Gunner. Karen blushed. "Oh, I can't ever fill your place, Button, but I'll do my best if it will make him less lonely for you." "Thank you, Karen," said Button in a sad voice. Karen's eyes were as big as saucers, and they sparkled with a strange gleam. Perhaps it had been foolish to ask Karen and Gunner to be friends, but it was too late now. The next night, the two girls walked up to the little red schoolhouse on the hill for the last time. They sat on the broad stone step, reminiscing. Karen took a small package from her pocket. "I brought you a little gift, Button." "Why, Karen, how sweet." Button admired the wrapping. "How pretty. Shall I open it now?" Karen nodded her head vigorously. Button took her time in undoing the ribbon. The box was white, the ribbon blue, and the paper red. "I hope you noticed that I chose the colors of the American flag," said Karen anxiously. "Red, white, and blue." "Thank you, Karen. You think of everything." Button had tears in her eyes, and Karen was sobbing aloud by now. Then the box was open, and Button stared at its contents, trying to hide her great disappointment. I don't know what it is, Karen. It looks like garden dirt." "It is, Button. Just plain, pure garden dirt, the greatest gift I could bring you. Someday, over there in your new country, you will be terribly lonesome for your old country, and you can take a little dirt between your fingers and say, 'This is Sweden. I am home again.'" "Oh, Karen." And they were both in each other's arms, clinging as if they could never part. "You think of the dearest things. I love the dirt, and I'll always keep it. And each time I see it, I'll think of you. And then someday, give half of it to your minister. And when you die over there," Karen was crying so hard she could hardly talk, "when they bury you in foreign soil, he can sprinkle some dirt from your homeland on your casket. Oh, won't that be wonderful? The soil of Sweden sprinkled on you, its own daughter." "Please, Karen, don't. You make me cry away all my tears. I don't want to die. Not until I get so old I can't walk. But it was sweet of you to think of my funeral. I don't want you to go, Button. Please stay here." And Karen carried on so that Button was almost unable to control her. Never had she realized that she meant so much to Karen. But later, Button and Karen dried their eyes and were happy again. It is hard to be sad for long when you are young and the excitement of life is before you. So they walked arm in arm down the road just like old times. But Button slept with Karen's gift under her pillow, a strange gift indeed, but very precious. She would always treasure it. On the last day in Lapland, Button was excused from all work. "Let her go, Maria," Papa told Mama. "I will help with the children. Let her wander to her heart's content. This will be the last time, because the freedom of walking in the woods might never come again." Mama laughed. "Pontus, you talk so strange. There will be mountains and woods over there, too, and lakes and flowers and song and laughter. You talk as if we were moving to a desert island." "And we might as well be moving to the desert," thought Button as the last farewells were being said. Alone, late at night, a gentle spring night that she would long remember, she strolled through the parsonage garden, bidding every bush and tree goodbye. Removing her shoes and stockings, she padded across the soft green grass, reliving the thrill she used to get as a child at having the grass tickle her bare feet. It couldn't be possible that all the things in the garden would keep on growing after the Fronsons moved away from here. In years to come, if they ever returned to this garden, all would look different, she reflected, as she took one last ride in the swing in the spruce tree, feeling as she had so many times before that it took her over the treetops and the blue mountains to the top of the world. "I am not going to bed," she talked to herself. "I must believe in my heart that in my new country I'll find trees and bushes and mountains and new friends." But her heart felt heavy within her, and the smile that she wanted to bring forth froze on her lips. In the stillness of the night, she thought she heard a heart beating loud and hard way deep down in the dark dirt of the earth. "It is the heart of my homeland," she said to the lilac bush, thinking sadly that it was budding and she would never see it bloom. Mother Sweden is sorry when one of her daughters is about to desert her. Suddenly she remembered what Papa had said about her roots being tender. He had forewarned her of the sadness she might feel when she took her farewell. She simply would not let herself be sad. She would force herself to feel gay and not to cry. Feeling the tears in her eyes, she started to sing a gay little folk tune to drive them away. "Janta o joy, janta o joy, a lit upa, lanta wagon, ye oja. Janta o joy, janta o joy, alt upa lata wagon." She sang it very softly so as not to awaken the rest of the inhabitants of the parsonage. She was lucky that Papa and Mama had let her be free to wander. They had been very good to her. Her heart was light again, and her feet danced a little on the lawn. Then she picked up her shoes and stockings, and without another look at the garden, she ran up the steps to the parsonage. Button had never imagined that the ocean could be so big. Gazing at it from the deck after 4 days at sea, she felt as if it had no beginning and no end, that it was only an endless span of water. Papa had said that in some places it was as deep as it was wide. This she could not fathom. The thought was so tremendous. Papa was standing beside her, the two of them alone, and he had thrown his arms around her shoulders. It felt safe and good to stand there with Papa. "Isn't the ocean one of the most wonderful of God's creations?" "There's no end to it," exclaimed Button, trying to strike up a conversation that would accord with Papa's thinking. "It is indeed," smiled Papa. "I'm so happy that you notice things, Button, and that you respond to things in nature. Some people go through life with eyes which see not and with ears which hear not. This always makes a void, empty place within the soul." "There are lots of people like that, Papa. You could almost single them out from a crowd. Their faces are always restless and unhappy looking." Papa's eyes scanned the mighty waters. "The ocean to me is a true picture of life, and we are like the ship. To To travel safely across the water, we must have an able captain. Button, my girl, if you make God the captain of your ship, you will never have to fear the storms of life which are bound to come. And though you may be tossed about on the angry waves, you will be safe. Your ship may creak and groan, but it will never lose its course. And at times the ocean will be calm and gentle as a mother's love. It becomes like a mirror with the moon showering silver upon it and millions of stars glistening over it. But the ship sails on in sunshine and shadow, in storm or in calm, never losing sight of its destination, and our captain sees that we reach the goal. Oh, I'll treasure your words always, Papa. I like you to talk to me like that. Especially now when we're moving to a new country and it may not be easy to be replanted. They stood in silence while the wind blew the ocean spray in their faces. How far they were from Sweden now. Button, was it hard? Papa asked tenderly. Did it hurt to pull your roots from the homeland soil? She nodded, smiling at him with bright tears in her eyes. He wiped them off with his big handkerchief. There now, he soothed. No use crying. Button took a deep breath. Last night, I was homesick for Sweden, but it's all over now. I don't like to hurt very long. Will it also be painful to be replanted? No, answered Papa. There is no pain in that process, just loneliness. It will take patience, of course. But your roots will soon start growing again in the new land. You are young and strong. As for me, I was too old to pull up mine. Perhaps they will wither and die. As they watched the great waves rolling against the ship, they held on to the railing so as not to be knocked down by the wind. Here were father and daughter, so far separated by the years, and yet so close in spirit. Perhaps the green-capped waves knew what the future would hold for these immigrants to a strange land. Button patted Papa's hand. Your roots will grow, Papa, she said sweetly. God will see to that. After Papa had left her to join Pelé and Nim for a walk around the deck, Button continued to stand by the rail, for she never tired of watching the waves or thinking upon the mystery of the sea. Her thoughts sped swiftly across the green water to Lapland, to the little white church, the dear parsonage, and to her wonderful friend Karen, with whom she had shared so much of her life. And then Gunner, dear, dear Gunner, so fine and lonely, now left to dream his dreams alone. For no matter how sweet and funny Karen was, she did not know how to contrive dreams. Button smiled as she remembered that last date with Gunner when she had brought Karen along to introduce them to each other. At first, Gunner had looked surprised and disappointed, but Karen had been sweet and tactful. I know that two is a company and three is a crowd, she laughed, showing even white teeth, but Button insisted that I should come along. She put her finger against her short nose. It won't be long, though. Just walk me home, and we can talk on the way. I wouldn't think of spoiling your last night together. Of course you're not spoiling our night, Karen. How silly. We're glad you are with us, aren't we, Gunner? Gunner nodded his head. Gunner, this is Karen, my very best friend. Karen, this is Gunner, whom I hope you will soon know real well. Karen smiled. There were deep dimples in her rosy cheeks. Her eyes sparkled, and Button thought she had never seen them look so enormous. Karen was tiny and cute, and the smile never left her lips. She held out her hand to Gunner. I know we will be good friends, Gunner. I'm so glad to meet you. I hope you'll come to my house sometime and taste my mama's cookies. Gunner laughed. I'll never refuse an invitation to sample cookies. When may I come? Oh, any night, as soon as Button leaves. Now listen, you two, protested Button, already feeling left out. It seems you can't get me off fast enough.
Well, there's nothing we can do to stop you from leaving us, Button, said Gunner lightly.
I wish you wouldn't go, Button, sighed Karen. You know that, but I am glad to meet Gunner. Gunner, you are the most handsome boy around town.
Gunner bowed deeply.
Thank you, Karen. Already I know we'll be good friends.
Button remembered how she wished Karen would not spread compliments quite so thickly, but that was Karen, always diving into things head-on.
We'd better start walking, she had said, putting one arm in Gunner's and the other in Karen's. All the way to her house, Karen and Gunner laughed, and Button felt relieved when they finally left Karen on her doorstep.
I'll see you before the train goes, Button, said Karen, and you, Gunner, whenever you come to call on me.
They had talked about Karen most of that night. You didn't tell me how pretty your little friend was, said Gunner, and she really has a wonderful personality, in a different way from anyone I know.
Karen is wonderful, Gunner. Perhaps you won't even miss me when you two are together.
He held her hand tightly. There's only one Button in the whole world, he said. You know, little one, that I'll never stop missing you, Karen or no Karen.
That had made her feel a little more at ease, but as they were about to part that night, she had impulsively given him her lips.
You may kiss me, Gunner, she had whispered, surprised and embarrassed by her own boldness.
I know we're not engaged, but I don't think a farewell kiss would be wrong when I'm going so far away.
Gunner had stared at her. Then his lips had touched hers for a mystic moment.
Thanks, Button, he said in a husky voice. Thanks a lot.
I'll never forget you. Never.
He was gone, and she had stood on the lawn for a while, shimmering a little inside. She did not know if she had committed a sin or not.
God might be very angry with her, and Papa would be furious if he knew. But she had had to do something so Gunner would never forget her. It was all Karen's fault, she thought. She had made Gunner think she was very special. As Button stood there on the ship's deck, she wondered if, before God, she was really engaged now. She didn't know if that would make her happy, because already Gunner seemed far away. And perhaps in the new land, she might meet someone even more wonderful than Gunner. Perhaps...